The following programming is sponsored by Bishop Mary Enterprises, LLC. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Real. Real. Relaxed. Relaxed. But relevant. But relevant. She's an absolute professional with a homegirl feel. Welcome to the Bishop Mary Show with Bishop Mary Foy Palmer, where she will discuss both religious and secular topics with various guests from all walks of life. So thanks for tuning in to the Bishop Mary Show. And now, here's Bishop Mary.
And top of the morning to you, top of the morning to you. Good morning, good morning. We are live here in the studio, and I have my co-host, Brother Marcus. All right. I don't know. I'm not hearing you.
Oh, okay. There we go.
There we go.
Mike's hot now.
Mike's hot.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning. And our
we have a God bless you. God bless you.
Now, you know, those edgies are trying to kick me first thing in the morning, but they better get themselves together because we have our first guest already here, and we're looking forward to having a conversation with him. So happy Indigenous Peoples Day. It was formerly known as Columbus Day, but now we celebrate a whole community who now is getting the same level of recognition. We'll talk a little bit more about that toward the end of the show. In the meantime, let's hear this message.
Hundreds of shooting incidents and multiple victims. Homicides that were senseless, cold, intentional, killing our men, women, and children in the African American communities. The question is, am I my brother or sister's keeper? Have we considered each other as neighbors? We can wait for someone to come in and save us, or we can save ourselves. The violence must end. Do your part.
Watch out now.
Watch out. He's going to fight. He's going to fight. He's going to
Rocky.
Fight. Fight. Fight.
Adrian.
Adrian. We could almost do the whole script, right?
I know. Pretty much. Pretty much. We could do the whole thing, you know?
And we just heard this last week with Congressman Brendan Boyle, who was our guest. And so it seems to be becoming a theme here for all of these folks that are fighting. And we are so grateful to have with us Mr. Eugene Pasquale,
D. Pasquale.
Let me say it right.
All right.
Who is the Democratic candidate for Attorney General. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, and just so you're in some good company on struggling with the last name, President Obama struggled with it last time. So you're in some good company there, and it led my daughter, who is my favorite Temple Owl, my favorite childless cat lady, she's a senior at Temple, to post on her Instagram feed, come on, Obama, get it right.
Oh, I know it's all right. Well, thank you so much for agreeing to be here on the Bishop Mary Show. We thank you for joining us for the first time, and we are certainly hoping that we'll be able to continue your access, shall we say, to this show. And so, given that this is your first time, would you mind giving us a little bit of background about yourself?
Yeah, so my name is Eugene D. Pasquale, Democratic nominee for Attorney General. And look, dad of two kids. One is in grad school at Georgetown. My daughter is My daughter is a senior at Temple. Grew up in the Pittsburgh area, so hopefully that doesn't get people too fired up at me.
We see the hat.
Both
we
the
see
Eagle
that.
And, That's right. The Eagles and the Steelers won yesterday, so it was all good for Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
So I was able to play two sports in college, baseball and football, and then came back, got my graduate degree at Pitt, Lauderdale. Well, I put myself through night law school. But some of the things that people are most noteworthy about for me, and particularly this office, my dad, I'm trying to become the first child of a convicted felon in Pennsylvania history, elected attorney general. My dad was wounded in Vietnam, eventually became addicted to painkillers and started dealing. So received a 10.5-year federal prison sentence. So look, he's doing great now, but that certainly, that experience helped shape me and how we got to tackle this war on drugs, turn it into a battle against addiction. And I had a brother with muscular dystrophy, Anthony. So we never had health insurance as kids. And so knowing what people have to deal with when battling these insurance companies and these big corporations. And so those experiences help guide me to being the people's lawyer if and when I win this election.
All right.
Well, that gives us a synopsis of you. I saw you last week at Blue Book? And you gave a very passionate conversation, and I sent it over to Miss Britt. And she says, oh, you were there. And I didn't get a chance to remain because I had to get cross town. But when you first started talking, I said, okay, this is somebody who we can all relate to. And that's often the case, because it's not often the case with some of those who are running for office. So I'm grateful that you shared your story. You shared it then, and you're continuing to do that. So people have a human relationship with you in knowing that you're not above what other things happen in people's lives.
All right. I just want to say good morning. It's an honor to have you on our show, Mr. Eugene DePasquale. I hope I got your name right?
DePasquale.
That's perfect. I do pronounce E at the end, but even family members battle, though. It's all good.
Okay, good. Well, I have a question for you. Why do you want to be elected as the Attorney General?
So I was the Auditor General for 8 years, and where I had, found over $2 billion wasted by Harrisburg, as my investigation had found over 3,000 untested rape kits and 58,000 unanswered phone calls to the child abuse hotline. And I'd made a lot of impact myself and my team in making Pennsylvania a better place. And then I was, I'm now teaching at the University of Pittsburgh. I had a private law practice and, was basically getting to have some fun and, hiking Pikes Peak with my son and doing stuff with my daughter, taking her to a Taylor Swift concert, just doing stuff I had not been able to do for a while when I was in public life. But I felt in 2024 that this was a election that we all had to do our part for our country. We all had to step up and do something, whatever that was. And my background, my experience, and my life experience guided me to run for Attorney General, that I think that this is the right office for me to lend my talents and my skills and my experiences to try to make better Pennsylvania and the country a better place, because this is such a critical election. We all had to do our part, whatever it is, and this is something I could do. So that's why I decided to run.
All right.
In your experience as Auditor General, and you mentioned some statistics that are quite alarming to me, the unanswered calls with DHS, rape kits that weren't processed. What are you going to do to help respond more readily as the top law enforcement officer of the state?
Yeah, so as the Attorney General, I'll have direct access to this information. So we'll make sure that there are processes in place. So some of this stuff can be a little bit jargon, but you got to have the right people in place. You got to have the right accountability measures. And what you do is you have the right process in place so that this never happens again. And you also go by giving guidance to local prosecutors, local law enforcement when it comes to the rape kits. And when it comes to the child protection, making sure that, because here's a critical part, a lot of these child protection workers have to go into some of the most difficult situations, making sure that when they have to do that, that they've got some law enforcement there to have their back. A lot of times these are just young kids, when I say young kids, mid-20s, with a master's degree, but they're going into some of these most difficult situations, trying to make a decision about what's best in the best interest of the child. And they've got to have more than just themselves going into that situation. So I'll make sure that we have those processes in place in both those areas, make sure our kids are better protected. And if there is a rape kit, we're going to get that tested. We are going to get that tested. We're going to get that information in the FBI database. Nobody has the right to do that to any woman. I mean, and I will say there was a couple instances where it was men too. So sexual assault is unacceptable no matter who is doing it.
Wow. We have a couple of questions that hopefully you'll be able to answer this. I'm sure you will. What are your top three issues that you that you will, you know, really look into as Attorney General? What are your top three things?
Number one, we've got to have. Yeah, no, that's a great question. Number one, we've got to have safe communities. And I'll work with law enforcement all over the state to make sure we have those safe communities and making sure we're getting illegal guns off the street, because there are too many illegal guns off the street. We've got to hold these dealers accountable. We're pretty good in Pennsylvania that if you're the one that pulls the trigger, holding that individual accountable as well, we should. But we've got to get these illegal guns off the street. And 2/3 of all firearm violence or firearm deaths in Pennsylvania are the result of suicide. It means we've got to have red flag laws in place. So when someone is a danger to themselves or someone else, we at least temporarily restrict their access to firearms so they can't do that horrific deed to themselves. So that's number one. Number two, look, we have got to protect, in my view now, reproductive freedom. Look, our family has a personal experience with this. We had an ectopic pregnancy at week 10. So because of that ectopic pregnancy, you know, look, the procedure that night saved Tracy's life, preserved our ability to have kids. But there's now 5 states where that's now illegal. We've got to make sure that we are protecting reproductive freedom. So women and doctors make that decision, not the government. I understand some people may be opposed to this issue personally. I understand that and I respect that. I always respect people's views, but the government should not be making that decision. We've also got to protect reproductive freedom for any woman that's coming here from one of those states that are trying to ban it, because women are dying in some of, I mean, think about the last thing you want a woman who is bleeding internally to do is travel to another state just to get a procedure. That is happening in the United States right now. And I want to make sure that if anyone comes to Pennsylvania, they're going to be protected by me. And look, number three, we've got to take on these crooks that are trying to scam us every single day. We all get these text messages. We all get these emails. It's out of control. And I will work with other state attorneys general to do that protection and to punish these people that are literally trying to steal from particularly our seniors every single day.
Wow. I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's often something that once it becomes a major issue, then we address. But if you can tackle it from the very beginning, that absolutely will be best. In your opening, you mentioned your personal experience with addiction. Well, not you per se, but your father with addiction. Given the need right now, how will you help to regulate or help, or what follow-up can we do with this war on drugs? And all of it isn't, you know, cocaine, open market selling. A lot of it is painkillers. A lot of it is other things that people are in need of. But what are you going to personally, particularly since you had this experience with your dad?
So number one, I investigated all drug rehabilitation programs that get taxpayer funding in Pennsylvania, so not ones purely private. And what I found, and it's not shocking to people that know the system or at least had a personal experience, you need to be in treatment at least 90 days. Okay. If you're doing 28 days or less, look, you might as well light that money on fire. It's not doing a thing. So number one is we have a once in a generation opioid settlement amount that's going to be coming over the next 10 to 20 years from Big Pharma, who knew what they were doing and still prescribing this stuff, or they weren't doing the prescription, but not advising people how dangerous it was, not advising doctors how dangerous it was. So I want to make sure with my experience that we are driving those dollars into the treatment programs that work. So that's number one, using that opioid settlement dollars to get to the treatment programs that work. Number two, I've committed to visiting all of the state correctional facilities. I want to make sure that they have in their facility. Now look, if someone tries to deal with a kid or they harm someone, look, you've got to pay a price to that. But I also want to make sure that when they're paying that price, most people that are in a correctional facility, a prison, they're going to come out at one point, eventually. I want to make sure that when they come out, because this is good for, even if someone out there says, I don't have any sympathy for those folks, whatever. And I understand that. I get it. I mean, I visited prison when my dad was there. I get that, you know, not everyone is thinking about people incarcerated every single day. But if they're going to come out, which most are, we want to make sure that they're able to live a vibrant life, to be off their addiction, and try to get some gainful employment when they come out. that's good for the individual, that's good for their family, and it's good for the community as large and the taxpayer. So those are things that I want to make sure that we are doing, that we are having good programs in the prisons, and also at the same token, making sure that we are battling, particularly for nonviolent people with an addiction problem, getting them into the right type of program.
I take personal privilege in letting you know that I have been a volunteer instructor at SCI Chester since it opened in 1998. So it's been 26, almost 27 years now for me. And because I'm doing it on my own dime and my own time, I'm able to maintain autonomy with the gentlemen that are going through my class and help. Drugs, of course, or the proper medication and treatment are their two biggest issues. And so I'm glad to hear that that's something you're going to do. And should you ever make the trip to SCI Chester, I would certainly love to accompany you. I know the superintendent well as other places.
I would love to do it with you. Let's make sure we make that happen.
Absolutely, so that we can continue to deal with those who choose and are ready to, shall I say, re-enter into society as a formerly incarcerated person.
Wow. You know, first of all, I want to commend you on the things that you're doing and the things that you're, you know, trying to set up to make sure, like, the people that have committed crimes, you're saying, okay, they might have done a bad crime or whatever it is, but one day they're going to get out, and they're going to be, hopefully, you know, an asset to society. So you want to make sure that they're being well taken care of while they're in there. You mentioned no health care as, you know, can you talk about that a little bit as a child?
Yeah, so obviously we're all a couple years younger, so anyone who's younger out there may not know that there was a world where the Americans with Disabilities Act didn't exist, and there was a day where the Affordable Care Act didn't exist. Now, I'm not here to tell you any of these programs are perfect, and there is no perfect, and there's one perfect, and it's not us. Let's put it that way.
Yes, yes.
But it's not us, and it's for what that's worth. So I had two younger brothers, Vincent, who was a year younger, Anthony was 7 years younger. Mm-hmm. And again, Anthony had muscular dystrophy. Now, Vincent and I were good enough to be athletes, high school, college, all that stuff. So we would just carry him around and, you know, and before the wheelchair ramps and handicap accessible seats, when we wanted to go to a college basketball game or something, we would just carry him. That's what we did. And, you know, we are our brother's keeper. But what I didn't realize at the time, because we were just kids, my mom was also not able to get us health insurance because Anthony had a pre-existing condition. So when he passed away, we had to take out loans to pay for the funeral. And he passed away from complications of muscular dystrophy as a sophomore at the University of Pittsburgh. And my dad even came to that funeral in shackles. And so you know, when I hear talk about, you know, trying to take away the Affordable Care Act, improving it, I'm all for. If someone wants to say, hey, let's make this program better, but getting rid of it, there are millions of families all over this country that now have health insurance that didn't have it because their loved one has some type of disease or something that would previously allow insurance companies to deny them coverage. I want to make sure that I am fighting these insurance companies and fighting for the people of Pennsylvania to make sure that that right to having health insurance is never taken away.
And of course, children, and you know, poverty is high in Philadelphia. A lot of homeless children, a lot of them without health care.
Yeah.
And of course, a lot of them got coverage through the state. Will that continue under your
watch?
Yeah,
and through the Medicaid expansion, that's
yes.
right.
Yes, because it's necessary for them. If they're not being taken care of when they're young, believe me, it catches up with you when you get a little older. Trust me, in my old bones. Yes, I am so grateful that you are here today, and I'm grateful that you accepted the invitation to come on the Bishop Mary Show.
Absolutely.
In conclusion, would you mind sharing either your favorite quote or words you want to say to our listeners and how they'll be able to get in touch with you should they want to get more information?
So, yeah, my name is Eugene D. Pasquale. If they want to learn more about me, they can go to my website, dpasquale4ag. That's forag.com. And I should spell it out because even President Obama struggled with the pronunciation. So it's D-E-P-A-S. Yeah, dpasqualeforag.com. And the thing I just try to live by is, look, control what you can control. There's a lot out of our control. Can't worry about that. Control what we can control, and we can all be better people.
Wow. Well, thank you so much, candidate D. Pasquale. We are grateful that you are here.
There we go.
And should the people choose you, we hope that you'll come back and be on the Bishop Mary Show to talk about your platform and how we can, as the citizens, help you to do the best job you anticipate on doing. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. We appreciate you.
Have a great day.
It's an honor to be on the show. Thank you so much, everybody. Thank you.
Have a great day. And that is the Democratic candidate for Attorney General D.
Pasquale.
Yes, let's say it right. Eugene D. Pasquale. And we're going to move right into our next guest who we have coming up. But here's a way to introduce him. Especially after a Sunday. Lord, I got a little bit of a joy. And we're happy to have first time here on the Bishop Mary Show, Mr. Akil Parker.
That's right, CEO.
Yes.
That's right, the C to the E to the O of his own thing.
That's right, founder of all this math. And he's also an adjunct professor, of course, of my beloved Cheney University. Whoa, whoa.
All right.
Yes, indeed. And we welcome you, sir. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
A little bit about myself. Well, I'm just, you know, basically just a black man, a father, just playing his part, trying to improve conditions in the black community by teaching math and making math more accessible, not just to the children and the youth, but to the parents, grandparents, uncles, aunts, because when the children come home, they need to have support, you know, and help with doing math homework when they get into the household. And a lot of parents, because of their own unfortunate experiences in school themselves, have a fear and anxiety around math themselves. So, you know, in my company, we create resources such as my YouTube channel, which, of course, is a free resource. And then we have books. One book and another book on the way, which is also another resource meant to help parents and elders, you know, to be able to feel more confident in being able to help their children with math. And, you know, and also we talk about the true definition of math and what it really is, because a lot of times a lot of us kind of devalue math because we don't really know what math really is. And math is really a system of problem solving. And as human beings, we're always going to have problems, but a lot of our problems persist and get worse because we don't know how to identify them and don't know how to solve them. So I try to, you know, always have that conversation about what math really is and to get us to get beyond the X's and the Y's and the plus signs and minus signs. And it's really a way to train our brains to be able to identify problems and be able to solve our problems so we can improve our condition in life.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, you know, a couple of things I want to say. Thank you very much for being a part of the School District of Philadelphia for so many years and realizing that you wanted to step out and do something else. So we commend you on that. I was reading your information. It was like, oh, he retired. I'm like, retired? But I got it. I was like, you look like you about 25,
I
man.
I know that's right.
but you know, we like to dig back in your history a little bit. What attracted you early on to kind of be gravitated towards math? What was it that made you say, I really like this thing?
Early on as a child, well, you know, my mother, you know, instilled a good foundation for me when I was a very young child. But then as I progressed on in school, I realized that like math was a lot like video games to me, which was a positive and a negative at the same time. it was a positive because it enabled me to kind of catch on to the algorithms pretty easily. Because it would be like, you know, okay, well, these are the steps, memorize the steps, do the steps, and go to the next problem. So it's kind of like with a video game where you beat the level, you know, beat the bad guy at the end of the level and then go to the next level. But also, what it was, I say it's a negative at the same time because often I didn't learn about the concepts, you know, the concepts that underlie and show why the algorithms even work. And then I would run into problems later on, like on standardized testing, you know, where they really challenge you on like, okay, your conceptual understanding. So, I mean, but early on, you know, like I said, it was like a video game and I got good grades and I enjoyed getting good grades and the positive reinforcement and the way my family would react to me, the way my friends and my peer group would react to me. Like, you know, I was, you know, one of the smart guys, you know, so. But I appreciated math, but I didn't love math until more recently. Once I got that conceptual understanding of math, that's when I developed the love for it, like more like as an adult, like in my teaching career and like after I started my company. Because for a lot of people, there are a lot of people that excel in math, but when you really ask them, like, well, how do you really feel about math? They don't really love math. Math is kind of like it's like a means to an end. You know, right. It's just like something that if I'm good at this, I know, okay, well, I can go to college and major in engineering or major in computer science because I got this, I understand math and I've done well in the classes, but they may not really have a love for math. And that's kind of how I was. Like I got a degree in finance originally. I never wanted to be an educator. Mm-hmm. You know, I became an educator because, well, I had a baby on the way and I left my job with the FDIC because that wasn't a good fit. I had a child on the way. So I knew I needed to have resources to be able to pay my rent and, you know, buy diapers and, you know, clothes and whatnot for this newborn baby that didn't ask to be here. so I needed employment. And math was something I was traditionally, you know, good at. And also there's always been a shortage of black teachers, black teachers in the more recent years, but especially in the STEM areas, you know, mathematics and science and whatnot. So, you know, I kind of just jumped into the opportunity, and I'm glad I did because, you know, teaching has been the best job I've ever had.
Well, I want to say this. Thank God for the baby, because the baby was the inspiration that brought you to where you are today. So we, you know, even though the baby didn't want to be here or didn't ask to be here, we're so glad that the baby is here because America gets to experience who you are and what you do. How do you get young people to gravitate towards math like you did to video games? How can you make that happen for these young folks?
Well, I think what I've learned is it's important to make it relatable as possible. So it's important to meet the youth where they are, not just the youth, but adults as well. Like, you know, because I'm at the point now where I can probably take any life experience that anybody has and, you know, relate it to algebra or geometry or arithmetic. You know, even pre-calculus, you know, oftentimes the mistake that we make is we provide these like abstract examples of the math that are more unrelatable initially in the hopes that people will catch on to them. And then we may want to relate them to something that is prevalent in their own lives. I think we should do it the other way. Like if a person is, it's like we think about it, like yesterday was Sunday, everybody was watching football all across the country, right? There's so much math we can do, arithmetic, statistics, just on like, you know, football scores, you know, downs and, you know, the rankings in the, you know, NFC East, NFC West, NFC South, you know, NFC North or what have you. There's so much math we can just do with that, you know, and when you do it that way, it just becomes a conversation where it's not really math, quote unquote math. It's really just we're having a conversation about football, but we're using mathematics to have a better conversation. Right. And a lot of times we're already having those conversations. We just don't know that we're doing math. So sometimes it's just a matter of just exposing people to the fact that, oh, this is math. I didn't even know this was math. You know, like a lot of people that say that they're so horrible at math, not realizing that, no, actually, you're very proficient. You're using math on a consistent basis. You just don't know it.
Mm. Now, how does it feel today as being an adult, being the smart guy? How does it feel? I mean, I hope I'm not offending you by saying you are a smart guy.
Nah, I appreciate that. But, you know, one of the things I think about as an adult in reflection is that, you know, I was able to become smart because I, you know, hung around smart people and I had some good teachers. And that's what I really try to do now. You know, I try to, you know, bring out that intelligence in other young people. And help people to see it in themselves, you know, and by, you know, using math, especially as a tool to help people increase their own confidence in themselves so they can excel, you know, whether it be in school or whether it be in a professional setting or whether it just be just in their everyday life experiences. you know. But I'm just glad that I have, you know, a certain talent that I can share with people that often is, you know, kind of hoarded and kind of exclusive and kind of kept, you know, people kind of keep it to themselves. And I'm just, you know, I'm like, you know, I want every, because I think that's how we really improve society, because a lot of times the people that know the math, the people that know the science, they're not sharing, you know, they're keeping it to themselves because they know that that provides them a competitive advantage. So I'm really out here basically trying to disrupt all of that and trying to create a more level playing field by making these resources and these skills more readily accessible to, you know, the young brothers on the corner that's hanging out in front of the Chinese store or the poppy store or whatever. Like, I want them to know calculus also, instead of just the kids in Philly that might go to Central or might go to Girls High, might go to Masterman, right? Because I want the kids at the special admission magnet schools to have to really compete with everybody. Mm-hmm. So this is one of the things that I'm doing, you know, by making it accessible and making it, you know, free, you know, in certain areas, you know, like I mentioned, my YouTube channel, you know, on the YouTube channel, you can get, you know, the same quality content that I offer in classrooms, the same quality content that I offer during individual tutoring sessions. You can get access. And because I think that's what it's all about. It's all about getting access.
Absolutely. I'm grateful that you said that, because I'm the proud product of the Philadelphia High School for Girls. And I was in the, they used to call it STAR classes, which was advanced. And I was I think it was only two of us in that were African-American.
Wow.
Back then, who went through Algebra 1, Algebra 2, Geometry, Trigonometry, you know, elementary functions. I mean, high end. So I have a love for math, and I have a high aptitude for it. And I'm grateful to see that there is someone who is recognizing the need, which is the same in the reading as well. And I'm involved in the reading course that we're helping, because statistics tell us that if you don't know how to read and comprehend by the third grade, it's a pipeline to prison. And I would love to say that for our young people, they need to be well-versed in all of the STEM courses. And that is going to help us to have an equal playing ground. So given that sometimes, as you said, people are scared of math. When Jill Scott was here and we were honoring her for her mural, she said, "I flunked math every year and had to go to summer school." that just wasn't my thing. And thankfully, she was able to get her diploma with hard work. But I know so many other people that say the same thing. You said you make it exciting, you make it relational. And what do you do for those that are just totally apathetic to it? What can you say to them that will provoke them to understand the necessity? Because now money, they could tell you all about that real quick. You know, I know about my math. My boss don't pay me my money. You know, it's going to be on and popping. It, you know, they'll let you know my coins ain't right. You know, they can tell you about money. So I'm assuming you must have some way, even in the money aspect, to help them to understand math a little bit better. But certainly share your insight in that arena.
Well, you know, I definitely don't want to romanticize things. And I want to be realistic. We do have to understand that we're not going to save everybody. And we have to recognize that, because if we don't, we may run the risk of essentially wasting time trying to convince people of things that they're not going to be convinced of anyway. But we could be using that time and energy to talk to some people that are more, you know, accessible and are more open-minded and optimistic. It's really a thing of marketing. Because like you mentioned, what Jill Scott said, like I was never good at math. I flunked the math every time. A lot of people, once they have that first negative experience with math, it becomes like a self-fulfilling prophecy. So it's like they have the first negative experience. They failed a math class. So then they have this expectation that every time I step into a math classroom, I'm going to fail. So if you go into a classroom, and this is an explicit conversation that I like to have with people. It's like if you go, it's almost like being a motivational speaker or a salesperson. You got to get people to tap into like, well, why do you think that you're bad at math? And why do you think, like, what are your thoughts about math? Like, almost on a social, emotional level, like, how do you feel about mathematics? Because if you already feel like you're going to fail anyway, you already defeated. Math does get difficult sometimes. It gets challenging. There are things you got to have to memorize, and things you have to practice. You got to make mistakes. But because people think they're going to fail when they reach that natural situation where they make a mistake or they get something wrong, they think, oh, see, what was me? I told you, I'm not good at math. When in fact, that's just part of the process. So it's difficult for people to trust the process when they and go through the, you know, the failures and the mistakes, which are really the best, the most teachable moments, right? So, you know, and instead, because so they what they do is they just give up and kind of shut down at that moment. So we got to have those conversations up front. And then we have to give the people an opportunity to get some correct answers so they can see. And then you say, look, see, you got this right. You knew what you were doing. A lot of people have had the experience in school where they may have had a math teacher that did not give partial credit. And I understand that because I see it both ways. I see the value in not giving partial credit. I also see the value in giving partial credit. But oftentimes, like I give this example, you may have a 5-question quiz, 20 points per question. You get 3 questions wrong. So you end up with a 40 on the quiz, right? Oftentimes, the teacher may not have an opportunity to really sit down with you and unpack, okay, well, what did you actually get wrong in those 3 questions? You might have got small, insignificant portions of the problem wrong. You might have got the majority of it correct. So that 40% that you receive is not really an adequate reflection of your level of understanding. But yet people have this experience all the time. So they think, look, I got a 40. See, I'm bad at math. Nah, you're actually not. Like, perhaps if they had been partial credit on that same quiz, you might have had an 89. You might have had a 92.
Oh, okay.
And I'm sure this happens to a lot of people. And then, like I said, it becomes that self-fulfilling prophecy. And then it's like that domino effect. Like, okay, every time I go into math, I already expect that I'm going to do poorly. So a lot of times we expect you're going to do poorly. You may not even really apply yourself. You may not even study the night before or the week before. You may not even do the homework to get the practice in because you already believe that you're not going to do well in math. That coupled with just overall in the society, all the negative propaganda around math, like anytime we want to represent something that's difficult, there's always like some meme with some math formulas in the background. Right? So we grow up like that, thinking that, you know, math is so hard, it's so, you know, insurmountable and it's overwhelming. And that gets planted into our psyche, like at all times, you know, for so many of us. And there's not enough competing propaganda to say no. Like, because what if we said math is easy? What if we said that, right? Yeah. Just as we say math is hard, people believe it, right? But if we said math is easy just as much, people might believe that it's easy. And people might, you know, think that, wow, okay, this is easy. I actually can do this, right? So I really just think that also, like, math has a marketing issue and a PR issue, you know? So that's one of the things that, you know, that I'm trying to work against, which is why, you know, I reached out to come on here because I think Black people need to have more positive conversations around math because we got plenty of negative conversations around math about how we hated math and how we didn't do well in math. And I mean, you go to the cookouts, the block parties, or, you know, you might be in a barbershop or a hair salon. People talk about, you know, how bad I was at math. Like, we got plenty of those conversations. But then the people that did well in math, like, a lot of times, like, we don't talk about it enough. So I think we need to, like, you know, start talking more about our positive experiences with math. Because that's going to, especially as parents, when our children hear that, our grandchildren, our nieces and nephews hear that, then they're going to say, oh, maybe I can be an engineer. Because we talk about STEM a lot and, you know, the desire to have young, you know, African-American children go into the STEM disciplines. But the reason they don't go into the STEM disciplines is because they don't have a strong math foundation. And a lot of times they don't have a strong math foundation because they don't try to apply themselves in math. They may not have quality instruction in the school that they're at. And they may not have, you know, a supportive, you know, base at home of parents and other elders that can really help them with that. And then there's another thing that compounds the problem is that, you know, children arrive at conclusions, which actually makes sense when they say, you know, if you have a parent that says I was never good at math. And then you as a child, you're looking around your house and you're like, OK, this house is pretty nice. We got central air. You know, we always got food in the refrigerator. We got wall to wall carpet. You know, my parents got nice cars and all that. I get the new iPhone whenever it comes out. I get new sneakers and all this type of stuff. You may arrive at the conclusion that, wow, maybe I don't need math either. Because they seem to be living pretty good.
Yes. Right? From the results of actually the math.
Yeah.
You know, because I had to get up on the lingo. Yeah. They say, you know, do the math, Bishop. Like, do the math.
Do the math.
You know, and I'm a generation before you. So I, you know, do the math is like, okay, is that 1 + 1, 2, 2 or 3? And of course, being able to have that. But I'm grateful for this program. How can folks find out about it? How can folks find out about
you? YouTube.
Yes.
Go to the YouTube website or the YouTube app on your phone or your smartphone and type in all this math. Also, I'm on social media. I do little reels on social media showing how, you know, we can use everyday life activities to practice arithmetic and geometry and algebra with our children. You know, on social media, TikTok, on Instagram, at All This Math. Everything is All This Math. Facebook, All This Math. I'm around, you know.
You are
like
All
I said,
This
the YouTube
Math.
Channel is my baby. Yeah, All This Math. Yeah.
Man,
we have a book coming out, How to Use All This Math, Volume 2. How to Use All This Math, Volume 1 is available on Amazon right now. That came out in 2023. Just a resource book, you know, showing parents how just the everyday activities that they're already doing with their children can be used as teachable moments and like miniature lessons so we can prepare our children for math class. So that way, when they go into math class, they'll have this feeling of, oh, when they see the new lesson on the board, they're like, oh, I know this. I do this with mom or I do this with dad. Like, okay, yeah, we do this in the kitchen or we do this in the car when we're riding places or we do this when we go to Target or Walmart or whatever, right? In the grocery store, right? So that's what that book is about. And volume two is coming out with more examples of how everyday life is a math lesson, is an overall math lesson. So, yeah, so definitely check out the book on Amazon. Check me out on YouTube. Subscribe and use the channel. Watch the videos. We have over 5,500 subscribers currently and just about 800 videos ranging from arithmetic up to calculus.
Wow. So this is I'm going to definitely let my young people at my church know about this because some of them are struggling with math. And naturally, yeah, of course, we want them to be the best that they can be. So I'm grateful that I have was introduced to you.
I want to talk to him at another time,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, you know, and definitely get this out. And anything else that we can do to be of support, please let me know. My heart is always with young as well as old, but particularly our young people.
Yeah.
We need them to do this. Could you quickly give us your favorite quote? And we'll be grateful for your time with us today.
My favorite quote. This might be not my favorite, but you put me on the spot. But this is one of my favorites. It comes from Frederick Douglass, the late Frederick Douglass. If we build strong children, we don't have to repair broken men.
Ooh. Wow.
On ooh, that note,
that speaks, brother.
That
thank
note,
you so much
you
for being with
too
us
much,
today.
Man. You play too much, Mr. Ooh. Mathematician.
Thank you so
thank
much
you.
For being on the Bishop Mary Show, and we certainly hope to see you again. Have a great day.
Thank you. Thank you.
My sorrows right up here on the Bishop Mary Show.
Is it okay for me to be here with all
yeah,
these
yeah.
wonderful ladies?
You can enjoy. You can watch
women.
It. Yes, indeed. Because these are my homegirls right here. And of course, I was thinking about a song and it hit me because my intake sister is Chaka Khan.
Oh,
and we joined
okay.
the Alpha Omega chapter together. Yes.
Oh, okay. Chaka
November
Khan.
The 8th, 2000. Come on, somebody. Antwati. Virtually. Amen. The world was shut down. But nonetheless, we joined the Alpha Omega chapter, which is the honorary member chapter of the greatest sorority in the world. Yes, I must say so. Zeta Phi Beta Sorority Incorporated. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning, good morning,
morning,
ladies.
Good morning. It's good to see you. Madam Basilisk, Nicole Rouse, we are grateful to see her. And of course, Ms. Jasmine Curry. And of course, Ms. Vonda Hairston. We're so grateful that you joined us here on the Bishop Mary Show. Good morning, good morning, good morning. So, we got something coming up with Beta Delta Zeta chapter, which is the chapter that has embraced me from the very beginning, and I'm so proud. I pop in on them every now and then just to say hi and keep in touch. Absolutely. We are celebrating 80 years.
80 years. 80 all right.
Years. Absolutely. 80. Years. 80. 80. And that is 10 more years, and God grants us years of life in 70. So we have already surpassed it, and we're still standing strong. All right, who's going to open up and tell us about the history of Beta Delta Zeta? All right, they all wait.
Wait, I hear somebody talking, but I can't hear them.
We may need your voice. Can you
unmute. Are you on mute?
Good morning. Okay. Right. You might turn up your volume a little bit.
Well, let's try it again.
All right. Good morning.
There you go. All right.
Good morning.
Good morning.
All right. So, good morning. So, I'm actually going to start with the history of Zeta Phi Beta itself. Okay. So, once again, my name is Jasmine Ann Curry, and I'm a member of Beta Delta Zeta chapter. Zeta Phi Beta Sorority Incorporated was founded on a Finer Friday, January 16th, 1920, on the campus of Howard University by our five founders, who we call our five pearls: Arizona Cleaver Simmons, Pearl Anna Neal, Myrtle Tyler Faithful, Viola Tyler Goins, and Fanny Petty Watts. We were founded on the principles of scholarship, service, sisterhood, and finer womanhood. Our motto is a community-conscious, action-oriented organization. Our colors are royal blue and white. Our symbol is the dove. We have over 900 chapters across the globe, including Ghana, West Germany, Britain, and here in the city of Philadelphia. We are a sorority of firsts. We are the first to have a chapter in Africa, the international chapter in 1948 in Liberia. We are the first to perform in a Macy's Day Parade. We are the first to immortalize our founders in wax figures. We are the first to have a sneaker deal with New Balance. And we are the first and only sorority to be constitutionally bound with a fraternity, Phi Beta Sigma Fraternity Incorporated.
I like her. Yes, I like her.
We can't mess with you. Yeah, we are a sorority of first. And I'm happy because I'm the first faith-based leader in the honorary member corps. And so that makes me historic twice over.
Wow.
Come on, somebody. Yes, indeed. Because I'm the first and only female archbishop in the city of Philadelphia and the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. So I joined a sorority of firsts.
Wow.
Yeah,
I love
we
you,
break
Bishop
the seal.
Mary. I love you. I love Bishop Mary.
Absolutely. So, Madam Basilis, as now the leader of Beta Delta Zeta, would you tell us what it is that BDZ does? Of course, we know that we are a community-conscious, oriented organization who loves to serve.
Yes. Well, good morning, everyone. And Bishop, we love you, too. First, I just want to start with a little bit of history of Beta Delta Zeta chapter. As you said, today is our 80th anniversary, so we are excited about that. We were chartered today in 1944 by 13 amazing trend-setting women, one of which is our principal founder, Arizona Cleaver Simmons. So we are excited about that. Our chapter is a very diverse chapter. There are about 120 of us, aging from our early 20s to our mid-90s. So you can imagine all of the diversity within our chapter. We also sponsor four undergraduate chapters here in Pennsylvania. We have Lincoln University, Drexel University, University of Pennsylvania, and LaSalle University. We also have a youth group. It's three different groups, different age ranges. We have about 20 members as a part of that youth group. And we are excited about our amici, which are women who do not have a college degree at this time, but they are certainly welcome to be a part of the amici, which stands for Friend of Zeta. Some of the notable facts about us and accomplishments, we do own our founder's house down in South Philadelphia.
Oh, okay.
We did have a street codename in 2019. So it is now also known as Arizona C. Stemmons Way. Each year we do provide high school seniors with scholarships. So we do give out several scholarships. We are very excited that 2 years ago, we implemented a scholarship for high school students with autism. So we're excited about that.
Wow.
We also, we partnered with Thomas Jefferson for years now. And in 2020, when we had our international conference here in Philadelphia, we gave, as an organization, we gave a substantial contribution to Thomas Jefferson for the NICU. And with part of that money, they created a lactation lounge for mothers, and it was dedicated to our organization. So that was huge for us as a chapter, huge for us as an organization. There are a lot of things going on within Beta Delta Zeta chapter. We have so many initiatives that we do participate in. But we're here today especially to talk about the 80th anniversary. And so I want to turn it over quickly to our 80th chair, and that would be Vonda Harrison.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
I have been chairing the 80th anniversary along with co-chairs and a full committee, and we are excited to announce that we will be having a banquet on Saturday, October the 19th, starting at 7. It is a sold-out banquet, which we are so proud of. We will be having entertainment from DJ Tone. We're having a piece performed by the Grace Theater, training company of Grace Theater. We have an excellent MC for the evening, which is one of our sorors also. Her name is Tracy Michael Lewis Giggets. We will be having some special presentations during that time as well. We just look forward to having a really good time on Saturday evening.
Oh, yes, and where's, I will where's be it gonna in the be? House.
I know, I'm not invited.
It's at the Felt Factory.
Oh, wow. I'm going to sneak in there. Y'all play too much. It's a lot of power in this room. I love powerful,
recognize.
Powerful
recognize,
women.
Brother,
period.
Recognize.
Powerful. Yeah, I recognize. I sold out. Sold
absolutely.
Out.
Mm-hmm. And what are the goals with the proceeds from this 80th anniversary that you will be hosting and celebrating on Saturday?
Yeah, so any proceeds that we receive will be going towards our scholarships and our general operations for the chapter so that we can continue to bring the community very relevant programs and activities.
Mm-hmm. Whew. Can anyone contribute? Like, you know, like myself, I know I'm not invited, but can anybody contribute to the cause of what you folks are doing?
Yes, absolutely. And I'm going to turn it over to Jasmine Curry because she handles the site for that.
All right.
Yes, you definitely can contribute. I can definitely give you a link. We actually just finished our Double Good Popcorn fundraiser where we raised over $10,000. And then for those that may not have wanted popcorn, we actually do have a donation that people can still contribute to our chapter.
Wow.
Yes, and all of that is aligned with our 80th celebration. Yes.
I don't even know what to say. It's just too much power in the room.
I know he's going to be after me. Like, yeah. Can I pop up in there? Like, what can I do if I pop up in there?
Wear blue. I'm going to wear blue and pearls.
Uh-oh.
With some chucks.
Yes.
Screaming out, Kamala Harris, you know.
Anything, and he would if I know him.
Yeah, don't play.
absolutely. So with the 80th year celebration, what are some of your formidable initiatives for this chapter year that you would want the public to know about?
Well, as a global organization, one of the focuses for us as an organization is to focus on the power of she, and that stands for our social empowerment, our health empowerment, as well as economic empowerment. And so all of our programs throughout this sorority year will focus on one or more of those areas. I know that coming up, we do have, it's also October, which is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And so we do have a program coming up. It's called Beauty from Ashes, and it will talk about how to recognize the signs of domestic violence. We'll hear from some survivors, and we'll just talk about the impact that that has on women and on men as well. So we do have that coming up. We have we also have a holiday fair coming up. We have some fellowship opportunities coming up with the Sixers game night. We have a watch party coming up. We have Purses and Prosecco coming up, which is a bingo experience. And so these are just a few things that we have that do center around the power of she.
Is there anything that you folks are not doing?
They stay busy.
We started the sorority year in September, and we have been running strong since that day.
Absolutely.
So we have got a lot going on.
Wow. I don't even know what to say. Y'all just have everything under control. You know, I had a question for you, but I said I'm not even going to ask the question. I'm going to ask Bishop Mary to ask these questions. I don't want to mess up what y'all got going on.
If someone still wanted to attend, is there a waiting list for the event on Saturday, Chair Lady Harrison?
She's talking about me.
Actually, there was a waiting list, and we have fulfilled that. So at this point, we are completely
sold out.
That is impressive.
Wow, that is impressive. Not every event, you know. And of course, I've been in event planning, so we always say that you look for 10 to 15% of the folks who don't show up. Yeah. I know that well with weddings. I mean, everyone comes, and then you find out that 15, 20 people aren't coming. So those that trickled on over there anyway are able now to fill in after the first half hour, 45 minutes into a reception. So I guess that's why I was kind of looking at that for my co-host here. But I'm going to allow you guys to give and say your favorite quote, which keeps you in line with the oath that we took for Zeta Phi Beta sorority. And I can't tell you how hippopotamus happy I am to be a part. I am, really. And I mean that sincerely. I brag about it everywhere I go. I was just Thursday, I was with Jilly from Philly. I was just like, she was like, oh, are you a Greek? And I'm like, absolutely, I am Greek. Come on, somebody. And the only Greek letter I, you know, Z Fabi, come on here with it. And she just kind of, she said, oh, that's so nice. I love their colors. I said, isn't it fabulous? You know, and we had a brief conversation. So why don't each one of you just give a quick quote that keeps you going every day in your service to public? Mm-hmm. I'll start with, go ahead, Madam Basilis. Mm-hmm.
I can do all things through Christ that strengthens me. With so much going on, I need that power to keep pushing.
Thank you, Ms. Curry.
Oh, one of my favorite quotes to live by is "Judge ye not." Just remember that everybody, you can be where someone is, and you can be where someone is. So you just need to make sure that you're in service to others at all times, because you never know what can happen to you.
Wow! And finally, Chair Lady Hairston.
Yes, how I doing? This is my first time ever cheering an event of this size. So I think mine right now is pray without ceasing.
Well, prayer worked. You got a sold out event. That's called success. Yes, my Sora. Thank you so much, Sora Harrison, Sora Curry, and of course, my Basilis, Madam Rouse. We thank you so much and hope you'll come back on the Bishop Mary Show again soon. So for those of you that are listening, remember what Bishop Mary says. If you can't be good, be careful, baby. And if you can, be careful. Don't do it. It may not be worth it. Be safe and be well. God bless you.
Thanks for tuning in to another dynamic show with Bishop Mary. To contact Bishop Mary, call 833-722-4748. That's 833-722-4748. And she'll get right back to you. Remember, let the healing begin with you. See you next week for another great time together on the Bishop Mary Show.